Good afternoon, and welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Webinar Wednesday, Planning to Pivot, Creating Schedules to Enhance Teaming K-8 in the Era of COVID. At this time, I would like to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning, Dr. Gracie Branch.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you for being here today. We're excited about today's webinar, and I'd like to introduce you to our speaker. We've got Elliot Marin-Bloom. Elliot is an educational consultant. He retired from Baltimore County Public Schools in Maryland, and during his career, he really has done it all, from being a classroom teacher, a school counselor, an assistant principal, a head principal, director of middle school instruction, and an area director. He is also the co-author of three books on scheduling, Making Creative Schedules Work in Middle and High Schools, Creative Scheduling for Diverse Populations in Middle and High School, and the Educational Leader's Guide for School Scheduling Strategies Addressing Grades K through 12. And we discussed before we came on, we know that school schedules are an important part of our work with students. So thank you for being with us today, Elliot, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope all are well. It's a real pleasure to be with you and to share thoughts about an idea in education that is very, very important to me, and I'm sure is important to you. In the era of COVID, we need to be able to plan accordingly to pivot. And so that's one part of our presentation. But we also need to recognize what we've learned this year and move forward in terms of schedules for next year. And within that goal for next year, we want to enhance the teaming, collaboration, cohort function in the elementary and middle schools. Some of you may have experienced a full in-person model from the beginning of the school year or sometime during the school year. And in those cases, students were able to be in the building on a full-time basis with the master schedule that had been created in hopes that you would in fact be in the building for all of or most of or some of this 2021 school year. Some of you have been on a virtual model where students have really been learning somewhat independently and somewhat through the guidance of their teachers using the technology that is available. And I want to commend those communities that work so hard to put together the opportunities for students to have computers or Chromebooks so they could maximize the learning process. Some of you have been able to have a hybrid program during the course of the year. Some of you may be on a hybrid model now. In the state of Maryland, they're talking about, or at least some districts are talking about, moving more toward a hybrid model. In essence, the key piece that we want to focus on is the opportunity to pivot. Where were you the opening day of school? Did you pivot once? Did you pivot twice? Maybe some of you have pivoted three times. Some of you have moved from full to virtual to hybrid, or from full to hybrid to virtual, or maybe full to virtual or hybrid and back to full. The piece that I want to stress is what do each of these options look like? And then what are some strategies for the successful pivoting process? Let's begin by looking at a typical elementary school schedule on a full-time in-person basis. And this could be any grade, but in this schedule, there is a morning meeting, and in this case, three modules of time. And I'm going to emphasize that term modules a lot because everything may not be in a period, as secondary educators know. So in this situation, the class or all the classes of that grade level could have had a 3-module reading language arts program, and then a special or an exploratory or an elective, whatever terminology you use, where one day the class could be in art, one day the class could be in music, one day the class could be in physical education. And then a lunch period, which in many cases is a lunch recess, followed by a double module of math, and then an intervention period where students are able to get additional help or have opportunities for independent work or opportunities for acceleration. And finally, in many elementary schools, the students may have social studies on one day and science on the next day. How do we convert that, or what does it look like as a virtual schedule? Well, we're still working with modules, and we're identifying the number of minutes that we might want in each of these modules. And so the morning meeting may be 15 minutes. There could be an advisory function. There could be something related to social emotional learning during that period of time. But followed on day one of this virtual schedule with reading language arts for 60 minutes, social studies at 30 minutes, art at 30 minutes. And then most of the folks with whom I've worked have desired a break lunch of about 60 minutes. That's good for the teachers and obviously good for the students as well. In the afternoon, when the virtual schedule of day one, a student would have a 60-minute math period, a 30-minute science period, and again, the total is 4.5 hours. Obviously, that number may vary. That may vary by school, by district, by grade level. I'm just giving you one example. If you look, everything that we had in the afternoon of day one sort of moved to the morning of day two. So we can benefit from where student strengths may be and teacher strengths may be in what occurs in the morning as opposed to what occurs in the afternoon, especially on a virtual schedule. So following that morning meeting, we have math followed by science. And in this case, the special would be art, same 60 minutes for break lunch. The afternoon is somewhat a repeat of the morning of day one, with the exception of not having a special. So art only appeared on day one, music only appeared on day two, and as a three-day rotation, phys ed could have appeared if we did a third day of that sequence. On a hybrid basis, we're really following a similar pattern where the students are in the building for half of the day, and then they're working virtually the other half of the day. We've altered the number of minutes. In this case, following the morning meeting, we've increased reading language arts to 90. And again, that's a somewhat arbitrary number. That's a local decision that you might make. With art at 45 and social studies at 45. And then that cohort that was in the building in the morning would then have their virtual schedule in the afternoon. Again, a 90-minute math period with phys ed and science. And again, that same pattern of what was in the afternoon of virtual, the virtual part of the afternoon in the hybrid schedule becomes what we're doing in the morning. Morning meeting, math, phys ed, science, and then what the kids had in the building on day one in the morning is what they would have virtually in the afternoon. And that would be a sequence for elementary school. The middle level, and I use the term middle level because we're talking about 5, 6, 7, 8. We're talking about 6, 7, 8. We're talking about just 7, 8. And in this case, the schedule would have a double period of reading language arts, followed by social studies, followed by art music. And again, in this case, the periods are about of the same length. The modules are about of the same length. 45, 47, 50 minutes in duration. A defined lunch period, which is typically a lunch recess, a double math period, a science period, and then on day one, they would have technology, and day two, they would have phys ed. Again, a typical middle-level schedule with 8 periods plus lunch. A number of middle schools are moving to, or have moved, I have to say that respectfully, have moved to a day one, day two schedule. And in that day one, day two schedule, on day one, the student would have reading language arts, social studies, and math and music or art on an alternating basis within the day one schedule. And then for day two, again, reading language arts, science, math, and tech phys ed. And if you're wondering about lunch, that happens during period three. It might be the first 30 minutes or the last 30 minutes of period three of day one and period seven of day two. Let's convert that same schedule, which was full in person now, to a virtual model. Again, the same principles, PLE, hold a bearing, because we're looking at reading language arts, social studies, and art on the morning of day one virtually, and the reading language arts, social studies, and an exploratory, in this case, technology, go to the afternoon of day two. The afternoon in the virtual schedule of day one, in essence, becomes the morning of the virtual schedule in day two. We're trying to capitalize on the fact that students have their prime times to learn, teachers have prime times for working, and so that's what the virtual schedule for middle school would be. It's the same whether you're starting with a traditional 8-period day or a day one, day two schedule. That's pretty much the same as you go to virtual and then as you go to hybrid, with the same principles holding true. So we're seeing on hybrid, day one for middle school, a reading language arts block, a period for art, a period for science, and then the afternoon virtually of that hybrid schedule would be math, phys ed, and science. On day two, then that afternoon piece goes to the morning. In this case, it's math, music, and science. And the afternoon virtually be reading language arts, tech, and social studies. I'm pushing very hard for the notion that the construction of the full in-person model for elementary school or middle school, and at the middle school level, whether it's a day one, day two schedule, or if it is a traditional schedule, let's try to build a schedule that will convert easily, and the teachers will have defined responsibilities. There will be equity in terms of teacher assignments and technically equity in terms of student assignments. Whether you're elementary or middle, I'd like to share with you some strategies for you to ponder in terms of enhancing pivoting. And there'll be four slides in this sequence. The first deals with communication, a key piece of pivoting. And in some cases, there's not a lot of time. I'm working with a school district that was hybrid the day before Thanksgiving, and because of an outbreak, went to virtual on the Monday after Thanksgiving. So that somewhat limited the opportunities, in this case, for communication. But we've got to have excellent communication with constituency groups, to a great extent, parents and students, as well as community members who may be involved in that. Pivoting is enhanced with a comprehensive orientation, and I've added the word expectation. I think we need to realize that people have expectations, and they're going to make judgments about our efforts based upon those expectations in their mind. And there may be variance in those expectations, but as building leaders, as teachers, we have a major responsibility to recognize that different people have different expectations. I'm sure you've dealt well with student availability to computers and the internet, and I'm sure by now in the school year, you have established teleconferencing opportunities as well. There, secondly, would be a series of administrative and supervisory responsibilities. As a building principal, one must be in touch with the health department, or the message is coming through the district office that are initiated by the health department. But whether it's the health department or district office, it's really essential that we monitor that information. As we pivot, we need to continue to monitor student achievement. One of the things I hear all too frequently is the impact on hybrid or the impact on virtual on student achievement. I would say to you, in some cases, those are real concerns. And in some cases, those are perceived concerns. And we need to deal with that regardless. what support are we giving teachers as we pivot? I worked with a district in the Midwest that did an excellent job in having a curriculum online, lesson plans online, so the teacher within a given unit could do the pivoting and continue with appropriate lessons, going from full in-person to virtual, or going from virtual to hybrid, whatever the case may be. Building principals, and in some cases, department heads, are still responsible for observations. That's not an easy thing to do in virtual, not an easy thing to do in hybrid, but we've got to do it. If a teacher is doing well, we need to recognize that. If a teacher needs some support, we need to be able to provide that support. And at the end of the year, I'm going to anticipate that most superintendents are going to want to see some assessment of each teacher's performance during the course of that year. Finally, in this category, administrators and supervisors need to monitor the effectiveness of a platform. What worked well? What didn't work? If we go back to it again, what changes might we make? If we've learned something from hybrid, as we might go to virtual again, what did we learn about a particular platform? And finally, in this category, teaching and learning. That's what we're all about. And whether it's full in person or whether it is going to be virtual or going to be hybrid, we have to make sure that the quality of instruction is there. And I'm pleased to say that districts with whom I've worked and from whom I've heard, I'm sensing a really greater consistency in the quality of instruction that perhaps happened to be experienced by students from March of last year, or March of this year, the last school year, to the end of the school year. We have to make sure that we're helping kids make transitions to the new platform. Transition's a very important word in education in general. And when we're pivoting, that becomes an even more important factor. What professional development will teachers need? I spoke with a group today trying to set a date for our next meeting, and they said, oh, we can't meet on that day because that's when our technology folks are doing professional development on the technology being utilized. And the unique needs of kids have to be addressed. The special needs of kids have to be addressed, and we have to cover that as well. And finally, support personnel. In many cases, they're the key to our success. What is it that we want the info tech people to do, whether it's supporting instructional strategies or helping us to maintain our records that we need for local, state, or national reporting? Breakfast and lunch procedures obviously will change as you pivot. What is the responsibility of security personnel, of custodial personnel, of transportation personnel? I worked with a district recently that was making a major change in how they scheduled for instruction. And those individuals who were called security really were helping kids throughout the building to figure out where they needed to be in a hybrid situation or a full in-person situation. And those individuals really contributed greatly to the success of that pivot. And then reporting attendance. One would not think that's an important issue. I think you'd all agree with me that it really is. I want to pause for a moment and see if there are any questions or comments, Danielle, that folks would like to ask at this point in time.
I don't see any questions or comments just yet, aside from the representation that we have here. So we have Georgia, Colorado, Washington, California, Minnesota, New Hampshire. So some really good representation.
Great. Thank you. Let's move to just a general statement about it's not too early to begin thinking about school year 21-22. And I'm sure some of you are sitting there or someone thought before today, gosh, we're still dealing with 2021. Isn't it too early to start thinking about 21-22? I'm going to say no. I'm going to suggest that we need to think about preparations in terms of budget, preparation in terms of teacher assignments, preparations in terms of curriculum modifications. And so in essence, what I want you to think about is what conclusions have you reached about the strengths and weaknesses of your platform's experience? I'm going to pause for a second and give you a moment to jot down two or three statements. And if you want to put them in the chat room, that would be great. But what are some conclusions that you've reached about the strengths and weaknesses of the platforms that you've had so far this year? I'll provide a minute or so for folks to make those entries in the chat room if they desire. An important question that I get frequently at the elementary, at the middle, and I'm going to add at the high school level, is a defined intervention period in the school day. Is there a time within one teacher's classroom for all the teachers of a grade level of an elementary school, for all the teachers of an interdisciplinary team or cohort at the middle school level to have an intervention period? Perhaps you're using the term RTI, MTSS, SRBI, if you're in New York State, even your AIS program. And if I've omitted your name for an intervention period, I apologize and feel free to enter it into the chat room as well. But I'm going to show you some models first at the elementary level and then at the secondary, at the middle school level, with a defined time to work with kids on their weaknesses, give students opportunities for enrichment and acceleration. But we need to do this during the course of the school day. And especially for special needs students, that we can address those needs perhaps from an IEP during this intervention period and still give full exposure opportunity in the exploratory or specials area. It's not too early to start thinking about reductions in funding. Again, working with the superintendent who's keenly aware of that, and we're going to approach scheduling differently because we have to look at possible reductions this early. Whether those reductions are local or state or federal, there could be some reductions. At both the elementary and middle school level, I want to talk about team structures a little bit, collaboration, time for teachers to work together, time for teachers to support each other. And I'm going to have some specific examples to share with you. And teaming or cohorts are only as effective as the common planning time provided teachers during the course of the regular school day. We need to talk about how IEPs will be written in light of pivoting. We can't ignore what's written in an IEP because we've pivoted from full in-person to virtual. We need to address the needs of special needs students. And in light of COVID-19, I'm strongly urging, and this is the second of many times I'm going to say, build a schedule thinking about full in-person for 21-22, but be prepared to pivot as necessary. Let's focus for a while on elementary school, and maybe that's the typical picture of an elementary school teacher with the books and the pencils. And certainly I must indicate how important teachers are at both the elementary and the middle level. They're the key to student success, and we need to respect that and support that as much as possible. Let's take a look at then some steps in building a schedule for elementary school. And I'm going to look at K-5 or 6 and then make some comments. I think I have a slide for K-8 to share with you as well. Suggest that you start at the elementary schedule to review what I'm calling a curriculum chart and identify for each grade what you want the exact number of minutes to be for reading language arts, for math, for intervention. If you have a special time designated for social emotional learning, to build that in. In many cases, the number of minutes for specials is directly related to the number of minutes a teacher is to have non-contact or planning time during the day. Horizontally, you see the subject, and vertically, you see the grade level. So if you look at reading language arts, for example, In K, it might be 120 minutes. In grades 5 or 6, it might be down to 85 or 83 minutes. Science may increase, for example, 30 minutes daily or every other day in K or 1, or up to 35 minutes in grades 1, 2, 3, and then up around 40 or 42 minutes by grades 4, 5, or 6. Start with a definition, the number of minutes allotted. And in this case, I've arbitrarily picked 355 minutes for the total school day. And that might be right, that might be wrong for you, that might be close for you, but suggest that you begin with this kind of a curriculum chart. The next step is to set up a grid. And some of you may do this exactly the way I'm showing it. And some of you may have some other ways of building the elementary master schedule. But in essence, there will be a column for each grade. And yes, I've skipped 1, 2, and 3. And yes, I've skipped grade 5. But by and large, we would list each grade and each section in that grade. And then 1 through 9 would be the number of modules in the school day. The length of those modules is generally a function of the planning time for teachers. And so we may have 2 or 3 modules for reading language arts. We may have 2 or 1 module for mathematics. But at this point, begin to think in terms of modules as subdivisions of the day and primarily driven by the number of minutes of non-contact or planning time for classroom teachers. We then make some entries, and you see 3 letters there, S and L and I. S is specials, and in this case, the kindergarten kids would have their specials period 8, and the 4th grade students would have it period 1, and the 6th grade students could have it module 6. In spreading this out, obviously start with lunch, or in some cases we put L/R, which would be lunch/recess. And yes, there could be additional recess time built into the schedule, but by and large, we don't put this in the initial draft of the master schedule. L is lunch, S is specials, I is intervention. And notice that it is a grade level intervention. All the kindergarten sections have intervention at the same time, all the 4th graders at the same time, all the 6th graders at the same time. And it's important to recognize that teachers need to work together in that intervention program. And in some cases, by grades 4 or 5 or 6, students could be working with teachers other than their math teacher or other than their classroom teacher as we address specific needs within the schedule. Notice, if you will, there are a lot of open spaces in that slide, because what I'm looking to establish is opportunities for large blocks of time. The larger or greater the number of consecutive periods, the more flexibility we're going to have to take that curriculum chart and then plug that in within that grade level for the number of minutes that we choose. And it's not out of the question for reading language arts to be all of module 1, all of module 2, and part of module 3. It's easy to make those kinds of modifications. And now we've filled in for you what the reading language arts block would look like in kindergarten, the time for social studies, science on a perhaps day 1, day 2, or week 1, week 2 basis, and the time for math. What I'm encouraging you to do is to have an extensive block of time for reading language arts and math. And you will accomplish that by how you spread your S's and your I's and your L's. In grade 4, also in grade 6, in this example, we've made 2 teacher teams. We have a 2 teacher team in grade 4, 4A and 4B, and we have a 2 teacher team in grade 6, 6A and 6B. In 4A and 4B, there are 2 teachers on that team, 2 teachers sharing the same two classes, and one is doing the reading language arts social studies to each section. The other is doing the math science to each section. The 4A and the 4B really parallel each other. There's a slight variance in 6A and 6B in that we've had a more defined time for reading language arts, a more defined time for math, and then a more defined time for social studies and for science. As some of you are using curriculum that calls for defined times in science with some of the curriculum models that you have chosen to use, then we're kind of making sure that we get that science time in there as an important consideration. So this is a snapshot of what the elementary schedule might look like. I want to take a moment in the next slide to talk about K-8 schedules. And again, I want to call your attention to a blog that I have looking at building a K-8 schedule and sustaining the middle school concept in grades 6, 7, and 8. Districts go to a K-8 model for lots of different reasons. Parochial schools frequently have a K-8 model. Schools that are trying to look at the security of kids who have felt comfortable in elementary school to keep them in a K-8 model have done that. Lunch is still just one module, and instead of calling it intervention, we're now calling it in Mod 6 for grades 6, 7, 8, Flex AI. It's a flex period for the teachers to manage. It will be an ideal time for advisory, an ideal time for intervention, or an ideal time for teachers to have a large group presentation, a guest speaker. It's giving the teachers the chance to manage that time. And the teachers in grades 6, 7, 8 in this schedule have two planning periods. Their kids are in specials 1 and 2. Typically, one of those could well be a common planning period, and one of those could be what I would call a personal or unencumbered planning period, obviously dependent upon the contract and the wording of that contract for the teacher's workday. In some cases, one teacher does reading language arts to all three sections, one does math for all three sections, one does science for all three sections. And there needs to be some flexibility because in this particular schedule, because we wanted to show the Flex AI, because we wanted to have double specials because of the requirements in some states for technology, family consumer science, art, music, physical education, that we don't have 6 core periods. We have 5. If there were 6, I could, as the reading language arts teacher, see each section for a double period. So there needs to be some flexibility, some rotations built into that. And so that's what we try to illustrate. The important point that I want to make is that in a K-8 school, let the schedule for grades 6, 7, and 8 be a natural extension of your pre-K or K through 5. And it's not out of the question for grades 5, 6, 7, and 8 to be on the middle school model as well. This illustration is of a 6, 7, 8. Again, Danielle, I think we're at a place where we can pause in terms of questions related to K-5, K-6, K-8 schedules.
Yes, Willie had asked, will you share a schedule for pre-K?
Can I do it? I'll go back to what you see here. Actually, let me go back. I take me back a little bit. I'll say when. In many cases, the times, Willie, would be even different than what you see here. I'm not showing a nap time, and frequently in pre-K schedules, I see that a time for nap is so designated. It may well be in pre-K, even in K, that reading language arts would not be 3 consecutive modules, that we have a module or two in the morning, a module or two in the afternoon, and that reading language arts piece frequently is subdivided into other activities or portions of the goals or objectives of your pre-K program. So kind of look at K, but say, those blocks are too long. I don't want to do it that way. I want to break them up differently. What I'm really saying to you, Willie, is look at period 5, look at period 8, look at period 9, and then think about what you want that pre-K experience to be, and be flexible, be creative. And it may be how you do it in the first month of school may be different than how you do it in the winter months of school. I hope that was helpful.
That was the only question, the other comment, when you had asked about platforms. Some use Schoology and Microsoft Teams.
Okay. Was that a comment or a question, Danielle?
It was a comment.
Okay. I will say that I'm one who builds the schedule manually, and then they put it into the computer for what needs to be in the computer. It's probably less of an issue in elementary, but some of you may disagree. And it may be more of an issue in the K-8 model. It is clearly an issue in middle school or middle level. And it's most certainly an issue in high school as you think about that utilization. I want to run through some suggestions for building middle school schedules and illustrate these as best we can. We're going to look at RTI or MTSS in a little more detail. Some terms that I use of primary frameworks for middle school, which are typically a traditional 7, 8, or 9 period day, but could be a day one, day two schedule. I want to talk about some planning for the intervention period. I want to talk about what courses kids take. What is your program of studies? And as Dr. Brandt suggested or inferred, is that something developed at the school level, at the district level, at the state level? But I want to illustrate that for you. I want to give you a lot of ways of showing how teams could be created. And then putting it all together starts with a blueprint, not unlike we're building a house, and then the actual grid of teachers' assignments. And although that grid may look different than what you use, I hope I can support the notion that you want to look at it in more detail. By and large, there are 3 tiers of RTI or MTSS or SRBI. And tier 1 is basically the responsibility of every classroom teacher. Teachers need to be aware of student needs, whether it's remediation or whether it's acceleration, and provide that there. Tier 2 is most often a collaboration. It's an intervention period. And tier 3 primarily occurs where we can't address the student needs in that intervention period. Let me illustrate that in terms of this schedule. This could be a 6th grade team, a 7th grade team, an 8th grade team. And not by accident, we have 2 teams there, Team A, Team B. It's a 7 period day, which you have figured out. And each team has ELA, social studies, math, science, and special ed. And notice I've not filled in special ed because that's going to depend upon the IEPs of the students. Where can they be in co-taught classes? Where do they need replacement classes? And those provisions have to be detailed. Look first at the notion of tier 1 that each teacher would build into his lessons or her lessons, those remediations or enrichments necessary. And many of us learn to call it the recall, connecting where we are today, where we're going today, with where we've been yesterday, maybe a preview of where we're going tomorrow. What you're going to see in period 5 is where that flex advisory intervention period would be. And not by accident, we've put both teams in flex advisory intervention at the same time. So if the math teachers decide that they have needs of kids that could be shared between the 2 teachers, regardless of whether the student is assigned to Team A or assigned to Team B, if that student needs help with decimals or multiplication, whether that student needs help with factoring, something more advanced in algebra. That can occur in period five, and a student could go across team to do that. Period six, the letters TMDM. TM is team meeting, so team A might have its own individual meeting during that time. Team B might have its own individual meeting that time. Or if the principal wants to meet with all the teachers of both teams, natural time would be period six. But on some days of period six, there could be department meeting, subject matter meetings, data meetings. And it's a chance then for the two English teachers to talk to each other, or the two science teachers to talk to each other. At this point, we're looking primarily at horizontal articulation. The schedules that I do are typically not built for vertical articulation in content areas. So we can build tiers one and two into periods one through four for tier one, period five for tier two, and kids who are going to need additional intervention could occur during that exploratory time. In period six and seven, kids would be in art, music, phys ed, technology, computers, whatever courses you're offering as part of what you may call the specials, the electives, the encore periods of the day. I want to talk about two different models that are typically used to organize middle schools. Many middle schools are on a traditional seven-period day. I'm working with a group now that pretty much is probably going to eventually decide to do a traditional day because of the programs they want to offer and the detail of the teacher's contract. And we must follow that and work within that. But in this traditional day, each class might be about 40 to 45 minutes. But again, it looks like a typical secondary school schedule and not unlike the one I showed you earlier when we talked about the pivoting part of our presentation. This is an example of a day one, day two schedule. And in this case, a teacher, let me look at that English teacher's schedule with you for a period of time. That teacher is teaching five different sections. Three will meet on day one at about 80 to 90 minutes each, and two will be on day two, again at 80 to 90 minutes each. The science teacher will see each of the five sections. Again, three on day one, two on day two. And I'm clearly not encouraging that the class travel together throughout the day. Notice that some kids may be in algebra, some may be in geometry. Notice that some kids may be in Spanish one, some kids may be in Spanish two. I would like a student to stay within that team for all of those subjects. And each class, as I said, is 80 to 90 minutes. I'm sure at least one of you are saying, oh my goodness, he forgot about lunch. I don't forget about lunch ever. And so therefore, period three and period seven are extended by an additional 30 minutes. And so some of the teachers and students would eat before period three and then have their 90 minutes of class. Some would have their 90 minutes of class and then do lunch. And some would have it split about 40 minutes of class, about 30 minutes of lunch, and then another 30 minutes of class. Phys ed teachers, don't worry. I would do my best not to have you work with a split class. I'm not sure how I would manage it when students are dressing out for phys ed, then go to lunch, and then come back. There are too many questions that are raised there. In this particular schedule, I'm a little more specific in terms of the special ed piece. So this team of teachers operating on a day one, day two basis has two special ed teachers, one primarily focusing on English social studies, one on math science. And each of those teachers is doing some in-class support, and each of those teachers is doing some replacement in their areas, their content areas of specialization. And if you look at periods four and eight, you will notice that the special ed teacher, pardon me, are dues-paying, card-carrying members of that interdisciplinary team. And in many cases, they're doing more than just sharing the IEP needs of kids, but offering teachers suggestions. And in one school where I've been working since the beginning of the summer, the special ed teachers are leading the pack in terms of the use of technology, and the success of the other teachers on that team, actually in that school, directly relate to the expertise, not just in knowing the technology, but helping teachers to function within that. So you may choose traditional, you may choose day one, day two, and that's a local decision. People tend to look at that block of time as being good for project-based work, and it really requires the fact that we have to provide training for teachers to handle the double periods. Some may be apprehensive. With training, they can be productive. The kids seem to adjust to it when the teachers do. Inserts could be two periods of English, two periods of math. Inserts could be a single subject team where the two math teachers would group and regroup kids. A combination team would be where a pairing of English social studies teachers have a longer block of time and can work on curriculum integration between English and social studies, or STEM and mathematics, whatever your curriculum possibilities would be. I will be candid with you. I strongly urge you to look at something that I call interdisciplinary maximum flexibility. It's creating a team where the same four or five teachers have the same four or five students in the same periods of the day, and in fact, have a common planning time. In some cases, we go to limited flexibility where we have some kids in Mandarin, some in French, some in Spanish, and we have to spread those students over both teams. Finally, I want to encourage you very much to provide a common planning time for your exploratory teachers. In some cases, for the phys ed teachers to meet. In other cases, to plan special activities. In some cases, to group and regroup kids accordingly. So here's an example of a two-teacher team, including special education. And these teachers are set up on a traditional schedule, but they could go to what might be called a block schedule. So on day one, the English teacher has sections one and two. On day two, that English teacher has sections three and four. The social studies teacher could have three and four on day one, and the one and two on day two. They're simply taking that block of time and they're making their own decisions. They're running their little school within the big school. And it gives a sense of ownership for the teachers, a major sense of identity for kids. And if we list some of the concerns we have in this COVID period, I think the more we can do to create identity is important. And to satisfy the health department, the more we can have these teachers in rooms very close to each other, the more we follow the cohort models that are being encouraged across the country. So just an example of interdisciplinary maximum flexibility where those teachers have a chance to manage time. I've never built a schedule that I couldn't do unless they didn't have a firm program of studies. Program of studies is exactly what we want kids to get. I was working in upstate New York. It was a wonderful setting. And I said to the principal, I want to help you, but tell me, what do you want the kids programmed to be? And he paused. He wasn't sure what I meant. And so I said, let's talk about the core block, the interdisciplinary team. What do we want kids to get? And what is the frequency of those meetings? In this case, look at that total core line, because kids are getting 30 periods a week in the core portion of the schedule. And some of you may have said, wait a minute, Elliot, we can't teach 30 periods per week. Well, my answer is some can and some can't. In the next slide, you're going to see it for 25 periods per week. But that core block should be equal to the number of periods per day, per week that a teacher teaches contractually, excluding lunch, excluding planning time, excluding other duties that may be there. In this case, reading language arts, can we back up a second, please? Go back to option. That's it. In this case, reading language arts is a double period. Math is a double period. Social studies is a single period. Science is a single period. So that's an example of double English, double math. In the next option, we've geared it to 25 periods. And again, a reason for that determination is probably the teacher's contract. And it may well be the equitable distribution of FTEs allocated to the building. In grade 6, you will see that a student has reading language arts for a double period, but then social studies, math, and science for a single period. In grade 7 and 8, reading language arts is back to 5 periods. And to get to 25 periods in grade 7, I've illustrated something that I really like to do. I'm going to be honest about that. And that is to get the technology teacher and an art teacher involved in that interdisciplinary team. It gives a chance for the technology teacher to integrate that curriculum, those assignments, those engagements with what's happening in reading language arts, social studies, math, or science. It also means that they're a part of the common planning time, and that's a critical piece where they can really design the program. Art teachers, I'm told, love to be able to integrate the art curriculum with the other subjects in the core portion of the day. And that's why I've illustrated that in grade 7. In grade 8, in this particular school, every student took LOAT, as that's what they call it in New York State, or World Language, and that's 5 periods, and every student is taking that. So we have a nice clean core block here of 25 period totals. 25 versus 30 is frequently a contractual aspect of planning the middle school experience. So the curriculum has two parts to it.
Excuse me, Elliot, real quick, I'm sorry. We have about 7 minutes left, and we do have a question about common planning. How should common planning time and interventions look when there is only one teacher per grade level? They're looking for a solution for small schools with part-time skills. Yep.
Let me go back. Let me do the common planning first. I would say, and here's the rule of thumb, and it may not still fully answer the question. If we can get all the students into specials at the same time, we can have common planning. Now, if there's just one teacher per grade level and there are not three specials teachers, that is not likely to happen during the school day. And so many districts have the defined time before or after school where teachers need to be there and have that common planning time. What was the other question?
That was it. They just needed a solution for small schools with part-time specials.
Okay, thank you. For the exploratory program, just giving you some options of putting the patterns together and the color coding or shading there is to indicate it. But we need to lay out what the options are, and the days of every kid going art, music, phys ed, as they do in elementary happening in middle school, is not the case. There are too many factors and too many decisions that need to be made. The important piece of this slide is to look very critically at the enrollment, how many sections you want to create, and what the average class size would be, and finally what the teaming options would be. With 8 sections in grade 6, we might have 2 4 teacher teams or 4 2 teacher teams. In grade 7 and grade 8, we would clearly have 2 4 teacher teams of those numbers in grade 7, and with a larger enrollment in grade 8, we would go to 5 sections. Not to read this to you, but to say that there are many options that we can create in terms of teams, and we want you to be able to subdivide those responsibilities accordingly. And this is in the blog, but I think you'll be able to study this more critically when you get some other notes from this meeting. We need a blueprint, a preliminary plan for the master schedule in middle school. And so we have either the core time or the exploratory time. And again, the greater the number of consecutive periods, the greater the likelihood of flexibility in managing the day. And so we have clearly spread the exploratories in such a way that we've created those greatest opportunities. In this case, lunch is a module. It's about 30 minutes. It follows the research. This is a joke. Don't take me seriously on this one. That there's a correlation between the length of the lunch period and the number of kids who get in trouble and sent to the office by the end of that lunch period. So I wanted to illustrate a modular lunch schedule for you. And if you have a question about it, we can deal with that a bit later if you choose. In this case, we have a day one, day two schedule and its blueprint, and it varies somewhat. What this all leads to is a grid. And I strongly encourage you to create a grid such as this for the middle level grades that you have. And don't put teachers in alpha order. Don't put teachers in by department, but put teachers in based upon the teams. And you would then designate when the kids are in a core team and when the kids are in specials or exploratory. The important piece is that all the scheduling models that we've discussed set the stage for team approaches to instruction in both elementary and in middle schools. And a team is a chance to respond to student needs. That's why Dr. Lounsbury and Dr. Alexander and Dr. Vars established the middle school concept, responding to the needs of kids. Yes, we analyze data. Curriculum integration is a key part. We look at best practices. In some cases, we tie in social emotional learning. The intervention period is an extension and a responsibility of that team. And this chart will show you that we have teams in grade five, in K5 or K6, teams in K8, teams in middle school. So a two-teacher team in grade two is a team. If we have three sections of third grade, it becomes a team. The key is sending the kids to specials at the same time. And in some cases, we encourage specials teachers to be shared between two small schools so all teachers get the opportunity. But the intent of this slide is clearly to say we can have teachers working together. Go back one slide, please. We have teachers working together to accomplish these goals in any setting. Yeah, just one class at a grade level is going to be tough. But again, I don't want to rule that out because I think we can find a way for common planning time. Perhaps we can find the time for regrouping. Perhaps we can find an opportunity for flexibility. Can you now take a few minutes to enter into the chat room before we do the questions and answers, if that's okay, Danielle? Can you enter in what for you has been the most meaningful part of the webinar? And secondly, as a result of the webinar, I plan to. And I'm open, Danielle, to doing the additional questions and answers while folks are filling in their responses to these questions.
One question was, what should the drivers of the pre-K-8 schedule be?
Oh, let's go back to that slide. I want to talk about that.
And we only have about one more minute, Elliot.
All right, let me get to that slide now. Quick answer. A key is to have common planning time for the teachers of the core team. A key is to recognize what the uniqueness of the middle school concept is. A key is to spread the specials and lunch and intervention to bring together the shading that you see for core in grades 6, 7, and 8. A key to it is for the teachers to recognize that in some way 6, 7, 8 will be similar to pre-K through 5, but in some ways different. And based upon the curriculum chart, and I'm not going to go back to that now, but based upon the curriculum chart, as you define how much time is needed for each content area, that becomes a crucial piece.
Thank you, Elliot. We've reached the end of our time. Do you have one more parting piece of advice for our participants today?
I do. And the parting advice is to read this quote from Robert Meehan. The most valuable resource that all teachers have is each other. And without collaboration, our growth is limited to our own perspectives. I then want to share with you the three words that have been the key to my success in helping schools, in building schedules. And those three words are move the variables. I repeat, move the variable. Nothing is etched in concrete. Things can move around. What's best? Don't wait till the night before school starts for the 21-22 school year and build your schedule. It's not too early to get started. Thank you.
Thank you, Elliot, for being with us today. You shared a lot of valuable advice about a hard concept to put into practice, getting that best schedule for our schools. So we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're most welcome.
Thank you.